Hello and welcome to this week's Green Shoots, History of Irish Football podcast. Coming up, we have the second part of our interview with the great Dermot Keighley. So stick with us for that. Don't forget to share the show on your social media channels to let more people find out about the history and heritage of Irish football. Turn on notifications on whatever podcast platform you use so you get notified straight away when a new episode drops. Now, Dermot Keighley is one of the most decorated players and managers in League of Ireland history. And on our last podcast, we talked to him about his playing days up to when he walked away from Dundalk to go north and play with Glentoran. You can go back and listen to part one in last week's podcast, episode 39. Here we pick up the interview as Dermot is about to leave Glentoran, head to UCD and eventually to that all-conquering Shamrock Rovers team of the 1980s.
It was crap. I don't know what happened. He didn't realise I was going to sign for UCD. I mean, we went in touch that he just came to matches. And then he went to the job. Well, he had taken the job. And then I think they'll give him a few goals away. And I think he said, look, the beast among the beauties, the Rovers, like, you know, so I think it was Beauty and the Beast. It was 10 beauties and me, the Beast. Like, I think it's funny. Because I think he went to the bed one night, woke up and said, yeah, we need some. And that was the end there. One fella's kicking people.
So you go from UCD to Shamrock Rovers and he brings you there. Was it a surprise conversation that you got? Did he call you or how did he kind of make it clear that he wanted to bring you to be part of his plans at Shamrock Rovers?
He just rang me and told me, like, I could see the players. I was playing with UCD. You see the player. Well, like, it was the 11 would get into any team anywhere. He was, you could see, he got money from the Kilcoyne. As usual, spent it well. Didn't just buy 11 good players. He bought players that could play in the best, really, like the best left, whatever position he talked about. He got people that could do the job. So he got 11 players going out on a Sunday with all of them able to do their job really, really well. You win leagues. And he said, if you want a real good team, oh yeah, he did. But you have to know what to buy. It's like going into a shop and buy something stupid, you go home, it doesn't fit you. And he's just going on for us, like, what's up? And, he was I had more roles with him than I had anybody else as well. So
you go to Shamrock Rovers, and we've talked about this Shamrock Rovers team before. We talked about it with Pat Byrne, obviously, as well, when we had him on the podcast. But, I mean, to do what that team did and the extraordinary period that was there at the club that you were part of, four league titles in a row, three FAI Cups in a row, three seasons where you did the double in a row. Ironically, the match that you remember the most in the cup, which is that loss to UCD, was probably the biggest trophy blot on the copybook in that period. I mean, to be part of that team and to be around those kind of players, it must have been extraordinary to be sitting in the dressing room and know that not only were you playing with great players, but probably the best team in Ireland as well in that period, by far.
Well, they're doing something similar now. I mean, they haven't matched it up. They haven't doubled. Well, I mean, they're the best team in the country by a mile. If someone asked you to go there, you know, if I was still playing and someone asked me to go to the cup, I was there, you know, I'd go for nothing. I just imagine playing with that team. So I think they haven't actually got the kind of doubles, but they're so far ahead and so good. I can see them there. He's fantastic, man. So you go, look at this. They'll be there for, unless something blows up, they'll be there for a little years. I mean, you lose something somewhere along the line, you lose the league like they did Chelsea. And you just get the bike and win the next one, and win the next one, win the next one, and just keep trying to destroy it. And he has. So the theme of this generation, the Shamrock Rovers team, I played them with the team of that generation, football team.
Mm.
And I talk about with my generation. So that's, I mean, I just have an affinity, and I have, I've always, and I've kept the affinity. I moved up there, I lived up there as well. Yeah, so loved them. But the actual, they were the toughest team of them we've ever played ever with. Always were the best footballer team I've ever seen. And again, I you know, you can only talk in your own ear. But, I mean, player for player, it would look anywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, it was trouble balls out of the line for touching the boys turning around. McCone coming back to get the ball off you. And me going up to Liam Buckley, like 70 yards away. And he said, yeah, just give me the ball. But I couldn't do what he did. So there's someone near him. I'm not giving him a ball. So I'm putting it up 70 yards. And he said, why do you do that? I said, because it takes longer to get back here. They can't score. But he just look at you and laugh. But then as you develop, you find out you can give him the ball with seven people around him, and he's going to kick the ball. You're not losing. My thing was get the ball as far away from me as possible. And I was glad. Someone else was playing with the ball. I was happy. Then I had to get on the ball. No, I wasn't too happy there. I wanted to get rid of the bricks. And then we do it all then. Part again. What do you say? Well, look, build a tree. And if I'm not there, pull a lock. So I say, oh, two. If he's not there, it goes long. If he's there, he gets the ball. Jim, there's no, this isn't really, it's not science. It's really sense. And I mean, you've got good players, it's so easy.
Yeah, it does make it a lot easier. And when you've got a great manager with great players, it all just kind of spins and turns together. It doesn't always work in every team, but it certainly worked in that team. And I kind of described it in...
It's in every team. If you've got really good players, good attitude, and a good manager. They're doing it now. It's the same. It works.
Mm.
But everybody has to be on the same page. And if you don't want to be on the same page, sling a hole.
Mm. And it's about, I think, one of the things that a lot of people forget is, you know, great teams always have they make it look easy because they are a great team and they've got great players, but there's a huge amount of work ethic that goes into that. There's a huge amount of self-belief, training, all of these kind of things that are really, really important that people perhaps maybe take for granted when they see these kind of great teams as well.
Attitude, work rate, all that is. The best teams do all that as well. They're better. They run more. They don't get beaten when they throw a goal down. They've all that. All those traits are in the best team. Some traits are in the other team. But the really, really, really good teams, really good players, absolutely. And when you come down to it, if you've got the best players, attitude is the best. It's the only thing that can be missing. When you've got Jack and McDonough, right? Said playbook, love football. But if he doesn't train, if he thinks he's better than everybody, well, he did actually. So there you go. No, but you know, if you don't get into that team thing where we're in it together, everybody, good and bad, you might be good at this and bad at that. McLaughlin famously said about me that if there was no ball, I'd be the best player in the world. So, you know. You have to know that. You know, you're little bits and pieces. So what do you do? I don't want the ball. I give the ball to someone else. I give the ball to Pat Bourne. Give the ball to Bob Flanagan. You know, you develop. But I'm a winner. My head, I train harder. I work harder than everybody else. I want the fucking ball. So you give the ball 5 yards, okay. I might say accept it. Like, again, the personality of people being strong. Each individual. If you're weak persons in a team, like Rovers now or Rovers when we were there, then they're mentally strong. They accept, I think, that, well, I do that. If I'll give you the ball, but you have 3 seconds. If that is going on. And he says, yeah, so like that, that's regular. That is, he goes three and he turns and goes away because he's got to get the ball out anyway. So, I mean, I'm so, so blessed for someone with so, so little talent on the ball, you know.
So in that period at Rovers, you win 4 titles in a row, 83, 84, 85, 86. You win 3 FAI Cups in that time. You didn't win, you got into 4 FAI Cup finals in a row. You didn't win the first one that you got into, which, so why is it that of all the trophies you won, the league, the cup, etc., why is it that the one you didn't win against UCD is the one that you remember the most? Is it because it sticks in your side the most? Is it that kind of feeling?
Yeah. Would be 4 doubles. Shouldn't have been. I don't mean that way. To say anything about UCD. They came. I've been there. That was the season I left them after about 6 weeks. Which, so they had a reason to win as well. We I know from there we trained really hard and they were a great crew as well, really good people, really strong will. Keith Dignam in the middle, Matt Moran at the back. And Ken O'Daly, good fellas, good. Obviously doing the degrees, but they were fit and strong and they had really good mentality. So they beat us and they deserve. We should have won on that. We should have been capable of beating them. But I think it was a lesson there. Sometimes you need to get it. You know, it all goes too well. The first year we're top of the league, we won, you know, then you go there and you get suddenly say, well, now here you go, UCD beat you in the final, how good are you? And I think that you use that as a motivation for the next year.
Absolutely, yeah. So from there to back to home farm then as well. I mean, so sorry, I'll take that back. You, am I right in saying Jim leaves? He goes to, is it to Derry, and you take over?
Yeah.
And
for the fourth league, yeah, he went to Derry, but that was his hometown. I think I don't understand what he went. He loved Derry. I mean, that was his hometown, and I think he wanted to go back there and do what he did with, like, that's really common, I suppose. He wanted to do the same thing to replicate what he had done with Rovers. And, you know, it's like everybody, you know, you want to go on and do something you haven't done before. And I think that was him, or something where he hadn't done it. So I think that was it. And I also think, now, in hindsight, he knew the Kilcoynes were going to sell up. Does that make sense to me? I never understood why, even loving Derry, and he did. It never made sense to me. He was in Rovers, and he was there to win another 3 or 4. That we were the most outstanding team, and we might have missed in the future. I would say you could have missed it. Cup or a league, maybe it would. We would have amassed, I think, a fair number of leagues, but I think he genuinely, the Kilcoynes told him what was happening, and he said, no, good luck. We never said anything. It's only now in hindsight, you know, 2020 vision. So, in hindsight, he knew, because he was too shrewd. I could never understand it. It was too. No, it wasn't him, so I can only think that he'd heard that he was a sticking around for, when we get there, he would just come into the league and had money that he could go and continue the career of winning trophy, which he did.
Which he did, yeah, absolutely, yeah. So what was management like then for you? You had to play and you had to manage. Was it perhaps a difficult thing to do because it's not just manage a team, but managing a team that expects to to win trophies and win leagues and all that kind of stuff. And then you have a decision of, do you know what I mean? Are you going to play? Are you not going to play? Like, how did you kind of see it at the time?
No, I just, they were such a good side. There's so many good players in it. I mean, really, it's all about attitude. You're doing all this, really. And when you've got people like that owning the team who don't let cameras go, you don't let them go, you know, all these kind of Jack O'McDonough, like, you're looking at them and you're going, they want to win another one. They didn't care. And it was Jim was like, they were there. They two doubles up. There was a two doubles up then. That's the way they were. They were the easiest bunch to manage ever. I mean, there was no managing on them. They managed, say, the English themselves, but basically it was a huge experience, huge desire in the team, and one being the captain as well, wouldn't let it go. He wouldn't let it drop. You know, if something went wrong on the pitch, he'd be the first one up to them, like, you know. So is it
fair to say that the team had gotten to that point, I suppose, the zenith, that they were so good, they all knew each other's play really well, etc. They had the hunger and still had the desire, etc. That they managed themselves a bit.
Yeah.
So you kind of just had to make maybe decisions over here and there, but the big kind of stuff, they knew what was going on.
The hunger was still there. They didn't say, well, McLaughlin is gone, how do we know where all that's what we want to do? They just said McLaughlin is gone, letting the players go. McLaughlin is gone, you know, McLaughlin is dead, and Lynn McLaughlin, like, you know, they just took it in their stride. They were fantastic. There was no managing them. But, you know, you have to do little things, and you leave people to do this. But for me, it was, you know, again, it was like being captain. Well, I mean, it was just like in the other group. They just knew what to do. Like, you know, you're there, you make decisions, and you stick by them. That's it. Like, but they never faltered. Like, and then they saw Milltown the whole.
Yeah, I think sometimes even, you know, with great managers or great periods in you know, a football club's history, whatever that football club is, there's very few kind of points in that club's history where you can point to, like, maybe one event and go, this here is where it all changed. And for Shamrock Rovers in that period, without a doubt, the loss and the selling of Glenmalure Park was a definitive moment in Shamrock Rovers history.
Was this gamble? Well, I mean, that was allowed in pure greed. People that were running the club who were financial gurus or whatever else, it was an absolute shambles. It was a disgrace. And many a club would have died.
Mm.
Many a club died. And it's taken them so long to get, not now and this year, even previously, trying to keep the club going, trying to keep marking that ass. Like, everyone knows Shamrock Rovers. You hear it in Spain. If you talk to a Spaniard, he'll say about football, say Shamrock Rovers. They know it. So it's a phenomenal club. And it took to now, really, again, I mean, they've had bits of bobs, but I mean, now they're what I would see as the old Shamrock Rovers. Like, the class is there, the manager is there. You know, they're an outfit to be feared now. But that could have been so easy gone. Could have been wiped out back in the day when the coins sold.
How difficult was that period? Because you were still managing them kind of after you left Glenmalure Park, and I think you were still managing for another season or two afterwards. You were kind of, you know, you had to go and play at Talca as well, which was added to the anger and stuff like that from fans too. So when you were in that position, you've gone from being the dominant force, winning everything, to all of a sudden it kind of looks like it's falling apart, and you've got to be the person to try and keep it all together.
Well, you know, it's a part because the players start McLaughlin, Jay picked the players and he went to Derry. And I felt, and I didn't put it across in words, but they felt I was sticking with that I agreed with the Kilcoyans and selling Glenmalure Park. I didn't. What I was trying to do was keep Rovers going. But it came out. I said I'd play. I think I famously said I'd play on Dollymount Beach if I have to. I didn't mean that as saying I didn't care about Glenmalure. I meant to keep the club going, I would do anything. And because I stayed and because the other players went, I think I became the pariah of the fans, which I perfectly understand. I didn't do it for, I mean, I knew I wasn't going to win a league with half the team. All the best players gone to Derry. So, I mean, I was prepared to stick it out. I didn't jump ship. I stayed with it. And I didn't know what was happening because the Kilcoyans had said they were going to do this to the boy Talca, they were going to make it a new Wembley, like Dolby Head. That's all you want to hear, that you're going to be continued. And I say, well, that's fine, but they were liars. So, you know, weird. That was the first time I got kicked in the teeth. And, you know, and I think it's a lot of us live down to this day where, you know, they see the boys that went left Rovers to go to other clubs are heroes, and me that stayed get kicked in the nuts, you know. So that's life. It's one of the things that it's just, but you deal with them as best you can, and I always have. And it that's, I gave that my best shot playing in front of 10 people in Dalga. So I mean, I'm stubborn, as I said before. So I'm there. I'm the manager. My job is to win the league. So I try it. But then at the end of it, the penny dropped. I mean, I can be off to take some. Forget about this. I'm having it for. I really understand. I didn't then. I really understand how much the supporters love the Rovers and were prepared to stand outside Selka Park and not go in. At that time, it was just great. But now, like age again, you're looking back, you go, fair play to them. It's something they wanted to stand up for, and they stood up, which is great. And the players, if you look back at it, you could say, well, the players should have stayed and really kept Rovers in there. But everybody has an angle, and the players are right to go and look after the players. And I was trying to keep the club going. So, sometimes you do things, sometimes you do things you don't want, and you can beat yourself up with that.
You've kind of admitted yourself, I saw you say kind of a few words that was kind of somewhere along the lines of, it's only when you left Glenmalure Park you realised how much Glenmalure Park was part of the success that you had at Shamrock Rovers, that having those fans there, you know, in those kind of moments and stuff like that, when you really needed them and that stuff like that. So you kind of, it was only when you left that you realized the influence that the stadium had and being there.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that would be the same for most people, that when you're such a big club and winning so many things, the fans are along with you. You don't think about, because you think you've got the best 11 players in the league, and you know, and I'm there, and it's easy. This, I'm going to win every league, win the cup, you know. And then you forget that this, every football club is no difference who actually says they own it. The fans own it, because the fans keep it alive. That's true. Than that, like, nothing pleases me more now than the success they're having now, and tell it, which is a fantastic round. So No, it goes around. It goes round and round and round and round. It keeps going around the circuits. You know, you're right. But at the end of the day, in Tallaght, the fans own it. The government might own it, or somebody else might own it, but the fans own it. Because the fans create the memories. Now, when you win a cup or a league, and you get 1,000 people out on the pitch jumping around and hugging you and kissing you, that's what it's about. And that's what the footballer and the people in charge of it can be very pragmatic about it, because you're playing and you might be playing somewhere else next week, and you might be, or next year, and you might be getting a few bob more or a few bob less. But these people go to the game every single week or two, whatever it is. And I'm willing to support you through hail and sun, sun and hail. Yeah, and I don't do that. I think myself, you forgot how hard they are. And when you do that, that's your finish, really. If you lose that, it's, I think you've lost. You're gone. Not just me, the Rovers did.
So you decide to go into management with Sligo Rovers. Was it a very different prospect going to Sligo Rovers in many different ways, in terms of the size of the club, perhaps what you had to spend? It's literally on the opposite side of the country as well. So was it a very different kind of sea change in how you had to manage or work?
No, look, Mayor, manager was managing. I think the same philosophy as I had everywhere. So I don't think that changed. It's like a little great town, great football town. And I made a lot of changes, but I think it was always, I just went to Sligo. I mean, I've done it, and I basically just tripped around, took whatever job was gone. Yeah, I don't know. I never had. You're never going to feel that. I didn't think I'd ever feel that, have the chance to feel that good again that you did with Rhodes. But all the tripping around with all the three or four, I think, four clubs in the season once. Yeah. So you're back and then you get the shells. So that's it. Another door. Yeah. Everything's back on course, I is in the wilderness, So, but then it comes right again. I think if you have a philosophy, if you have will to win, if you have whatever, and you get picked by the right club, things fall into place. Falls into place grand. But before the Shelbourne thing, the 2000, I was like a traveller. I should have lived in the car. It was gone. I went everywhere.
You were still fairly successful, though. I mean, you weren't winning major trophies, maybe, but you brought Sligo over since the Premier Division. I'm pretty sure you brought up Finn Harps as well, and you got some good league positions as well once you did get promoted. So it's not trophies, but it's still success in the relative terms of the club and what you were trying to do there.
I was not trophies. I loved it. And I mean, I don't think I left a club in worse shape than when I took over. I think they were always better when I was leaving. Barry was the only one. I last 6 weeks a day, I couldn't deal with it. I don't know. The whole everything with me mammy, and I don't know. I couldn't talk. That was the only time. In fairness, over a long, long time, that was the only time I absolutely failed. Anywhere else, if I didn't win something, I'd go with it. And I kept it. People who followed the club, which we were talking about there a few minutes ago, I kept them happy. Because the team I've had, always worked hard. Now, they might have been the best players in the world, but they would have a structure, and 100% is the minimum. And I think people like that. If you don't win it, everybody can't win a cup. Everybody can't win a league. You only want one team, or you're in a double, which is so hard to do. really, really difficult. So if you go to a club and they're in the doldrums, and next they go, like Longford, we took them off at the bottom and they finished fifth. That was like winning the league there. So once you have that, I think, once you keep that, and you keep the fans on side, by saying, look, I've only got X number of pounds to spend, but I promise you, you'll get your value for money. You know, these people are going to try, and they'll be fit, and that's all you can gather. And they play a certain way, that's grand. And I think that's really the legacy of it is that. It's like, well, I couldn't do when that went in a trophy sometime every now and then. Like, no. I love filling it with the old beer and getting the drink out. You lose that. You lose very quickly.
That time at Shelburne, though, was a wonderful kind of magical time for the club, for you, etc. It was an incredible season, that 2000 season, because you as you mentioned, you won the double as well. You won two leagues with Shells, etc. So what are you taking from the things that you've learned before, you know, working under the likes of Jim McLaughlin and, you know, his great legacy and his great management ability as well? Was there stuff that you took from him and how he did things as well, and that Shamrock Rovers team, Dundalk, etc., and brought them into the teams that you managed and that you kind of worked with as well?
Very simple with that. Like McLaughlin said, I need money, but good players. Good players and attitude win a league. It's simple as that. I mean, in the middle of the one season, their attitude was, for a lot of them, was appalling. I mean, they thought they were great. They had been there and they'd won a cup. I don't know why. But they thought they were fantastic. They thought they'd be this. And I'm looking at them going, no. I mean, you fellas, I wouldn't track back. Playing wide in a 4-4-2, and they wouldn't track back. And I'm looking at them, why would you not? Why would we stay up here? And when you get the ball, give it to us. So, it's out the door straight away, you're gone. The whole basis of the whole thing is working. So if you work hard and you have good players, you win the job. It's a good time. It's very simple. I know what we talk to death now about on telly about different things. Well, it's really, it's simple. Good players, attitude, fitness, done. You win. So sometimes a lot of people don't have the money to have really good players. Well, I was in a position to case with the power. I said, I want with him. I want him in Ollie Bourne, him in. And I just put the team in as I like to see my own teams. And it worked. Now, the double's a bonus, obviously. But I mean, for me, it was always trying to win the league. If you want to cope with it, man, perfectly with the league. And I think the league is over, whatever, 30 matches, 40 matches, whatever it is. I think that's when you win that, you've won no matter what, instead of four matches in cup. See, I never got something. Just half long track where it's the highlight that you're done with the league. You beat the week, so to win four matches or five matches, then they get this big, huge trophy given to you. So thanks. Four matches. You got beat in like 24 or 25 matches. I can remember going down to Car Games when Bacuzzi was there. And, looking and getting played off the park and coming away and getting beat 2-0. And I was punching the air because we went and beat 5. Like, who wants that, so you want to be like Cork Games, where then all the good players, Herrick and fellas coming around, Father, Ilya, really good team, really good players. You want that all the time. That's your ambition. And I was lucky enough to be able to people, wasn't me enough to do that, doing enough. So I'm grateful.
You mentioned when you came into Shelburne, some of the lads maybe didn't have the right attitude, etc. And you kind of, a couple of them, you slung the hook for them, etc. as well. Did it give you a better understanding, yeah, perhaps, of the same situation that you'd gone through with Jim as well, in terms of now it was you kind of on the receiving end of it, and then you kind of go, look, if you're not part of the philosophy, if you're not part of the attitude that we want here, then I'm afraid, you know, no arguments here, you're out.
You'll be one boss. You know, you have your thing. The club signed me, so it's none of the players' business. They do what they're told. I just changed the mentality. It's the way we play. But they were fantastic. The players are great. They do what they're told. I mean, if you say you want to do A, B, and C, and they buy into it. And it's always say, like, we train so hard that all my teams, they'll all tell you if you get a player, they kill them, I absolutely more than train. Because you have to be fit. No matter what you want to do, you have to be fit. And it's worked in mold.
What was it like working with Ollie Byrne as well? One of the most extraordinary characters I think there has ever been in the League of Ireland. What a guy.
Yeah. He was such a man. When he was nice, he's so lovely. He'd give it. But Shelburne Football Club, he didn't care about anything else. And once Shelburne, if you were winning matches, Ollie was your best friend. I could win 6 matches on the trot, go in, and maybe drew against someone, say Waterford or something that might be lower in the league. And he'd be ferocious, kicking and roaring and shouting, and like you'd lost the league. And then you'd come in on training, and he's over and he's hugging you and kissing you. There's absolutely no one like him ever was or ever will be. He could not see past Chelsea. He was showing that. Now, will to win, desire, if you could put half of that into some of the players or the managers that took up, you would have been on the winner. But but again, it's something that you can only do that once. And I was lucky to be in Chelsea when he was there. Lucky and unlucky. I mean, lucky that I could see the lunatic, but unlucky that he was a lunatic. He was absolutely stone mad. I thought I was mad, but I come here. I was in the Haveney place below. But you could see all he ever wanted was for Chelsea to win. He didn't want anything else. There was nothing in his life. Chelsea to win. So if you can get a bit of that into 11 players, you know, you're the winner. You're the winner. But I loved him. I had to say, at times. And then I hated him at times. I mean, you couldn't just like Ollie or dislike him, I think. You either loved him or you hated him, or you loved and hated him. I'm interested in towards that. You loved and hated him. You know, waiting to come off after a 1-1 draw against a 0-0, or you got beaten 1-0, and you're walking off Falcon. And he's standing at the gate, and he's powered me and the next day, I'll back down, but you're doing a lot of it myself. So, you know, you're losing, you're going kicking tables, round cups. So,
I know I'm taking up a lot of your time here today, but it's just I love talking to you. It's fantastic.
My lovely wife watches series. It could be a fucking series. You might have that picture of it.
But I wanted to talk to you, I suppose, about life away from football and kind of what you're doing now, because it seems like a very, it's almost like the complete opposite of of what you were doing for 40 years of your life, which is, you know, the constant pressures of playing for football and doing all those kind of things, etc. Whereas now you're in Lanzarote with Jane, you've got, you know, the bar, and you were talking to me the other day about how you like to just kind of sit out in the sun sometimes with your crossword and do that. So you've kind of gone a kind of the opposite side of things. You're almost like you're coming up for air, and you're relaxing, and you're chilling out now, and that's part of your lifestyle.
I feel grateful that I can still breathe in the air. That's cool. Like Jane had said once to me, when you hit 70, something happens. You know, you're kind of just about that nonsense, running around and fighting, and you know, you kind of get saying like, Jesus, what's the point? Like, so we're down the many years, we get 8 years here. Jane, I saw Jane, telling you the truth. I met her at home, and she was coming over here, and she'd been over here many times. So I followed her over, and I chased her around the place. I think it was on the verge of calling the cops. I think every time she looked up, I was there. Like, so fortunately for me, she got to understand me a little bit. And we got married, and we've a lovely life. And I'm only now beginning to appreciate the good things. Having a lovely wife, having a lovely arm, being capable of going out and doing the crosswords and have a swim, going to walk when I want to be. Well, I mean, I do this now 3 nights a week, but that'll be coming to an end as well. So, yeah, I know. Life, but then I wouldn't swap the other 40 years. I think you have to do the other 40 years to appreciate the last eight, like, and also, again, I think life is life. Look, I've been blessed when you think about all the good times you've had, and all the bad times, all the cups I've broken, throwing them off walls, watching tea dripping down Desi Baker's shirt, where she will pull a cup of tea off the wall and it comes down and it's dribbling down onto his jersey, onto his head, or onto his jersey. And he never knows that I'm in the middle of a ramp, like, and he knows that he just doesn't even brush it out, just see the stuff coming down. Now, it might have been Desi, but I think it was. And I'm looking and screaming and tea coming down here, the back of it, and then you go, not answering your back. And then, you know, throwing it back, and then the tail comes up. So, you know, things like that, that would mean. I've been very, very lucky. I really have been very. As the book said, for a man, better without the ball. I was like my dad, no technical genius. I mean, the assistant managers and coaches all done all that stuff. I just came in basically and kicked chairs up and to tea, I mean, without the support of people. Matthews, these people that stick by you, you know, all the time, would do a training session and knew what you wanted. Fantastic.
I hope you don't mind me saying it, but I get a sense that you're a bit self-deprecating, as in, I know in football teams there's also the team and there's coaches and all that kind of stuff, but it seems like you kind of, you don't want to praise yourself too much for the things that you've done, in terms of like you've been very successful in teams and you've managed really successfully in teams, you've won trophies and cups and all that kind of stuff, and it seems you seem to kind of take your own ability and your own skills out of the equation a little bit, even though that might have been the thing that did win those league titles and did win those trophies. Am I right in saying that a little bit?
And the life of the people is really not too hard when you get them right. So you know, the basic. Well, I'm more afraid of me than afraid to lose. Much more than that. it wasn't great. It wasn't really the, like when I was playing, the way we played, high up the pitch, playing up, you know, playing that way. That means more to me than managing and winning things. The fact that we brought something, although it's never been mentioned, we brought something into the league that wasn't there before, and we brought this shit about holding the ball on, and that came from Saddle with McLaughlin, and I carried it on through my career. But I think that more than that would please me. But you know, what do you do? I mean, I'd be pretty bored if I went out every night with you for a point, sad talk, which I don't know how many millions I won. I mean, you took a point over me. It's have you been out with Daly? What an asshole. You know, the trainers just bring to mind that going and haven't won a medal or won a medal. Never stop talking about it. And I feel I say, seriously, will you go on away and stop annoying me? Well, you can't do. You know, if you can win, I don't know. Maybe I'm self-deprecating. Just matter of philosophy in football that I carried, and it was the same with every club. But it's not like you're going somewhere different than the voice and some strategy that gets a team out of the bottom four and finishes in the top four. Slowly, it's the same stuff, like, you know. It's get money. The easy way is get a few more, a really good place, join the league. It's crap. And like, what do you think? What do I take credit for that? Saying, well, like, if I didn't have Shell's money, I'd have won the league anyway. I wouldn't. If I didn't buy Salsa win. I mean, we won the league with Shells, with Paul Doolan playing in the middle. I mean, you know, he's a fantastic player. But the way they take the credit for him being a bit older, but I needed it. It's like you won't get what you need. You say, well, I need a fella to get on the ball, a fella knows experience, get Paul Doolan. Cheap, he's finished. Well, he's had it, finished playing at the peak. He's fantastic. She, you know, he's going to be fantastic. Six player. Again, I don't know. You go to a game and you look and say, fuck, he's brutal. He's a player. He's a bit of. And you might get him and they go, you don't like the train or you won't try to do that. Say, well, okay, you one thing you're good at, but you've treated your bail. So it's a way. You know, you'd be looking at someone going, jeez, he's brilliant. How's everything? He is brilliant. You don't have to be a genius to look at it and say, hey, no, he's. Someone says, look, this fella, he's great, does it. You're looking, no. He's standing up, 6 foot four. I love the big centre forward. The ball has gone long, big 6 foot four guy, you know, and you go, can't run, not walk, doesn't do that. Look, thank you very much. I want you. They're like, it's not too hard to make it. You've chasing your head, you want. They don't have it. They don't have it. Eventually, again, if you have money, it's easy. Obviously, you can go and get a really good player. But if you know, you still have the same principles. They don't do it as well. I think so. Ali said, someone said to me like that. When you have a good team, if you lose the ball, you get it back. But with a poor team, you keep losing the ball and you can never get it back. So they're simple. It's not. People making a fortune out of making a game. It is. It's idiot proof. Like, you know, it's not. If you have any kind of management intelligence and good attitude, you don't need to have read books about 442, 433, 1476. Like, there are no numbers. The 11 players on the pitch, everybody has to pull in this year. You can't be standing up there. You're saying about Mo Salah now, he's standing up playing outside right and wide on the right or wide on the left, but he doesn't be tracking back. You're looking at Mo Salah and you're saying, Casey's not walking. But everybody sees that. The fella, many fellas in the crowd singing. I see it. It's like, most of it, for some reason, is kind of off the boil. You either drop them, give it. It's not hard. Don't keep playing them and saying, look, will you please run? You say, listen, man, come. If I don't get X number of miles out of you next week, you can say, oh, God, you're gone. It's not hard. So whether I'm deprecating or not, I don't know. I don't think it's such a big deal. And I really don't. I mean, I do the same things all along. I didn't do much. Maybe, in fact, I definitely have a temper. You know, you have to run hard, this, and be afraid of the manager in case he chose a cooker. Yeah. It's easy to put people in boxes and say, well, the house tolls, there you go. So, I mean, I might be gone. I'm just going to go into the pool now when you get off top.
Dermot, I will let you go. Thanks for taking up quite a chunk of your time on doing the interview as well. It's been fantastic to talk to you about those amazing memories and those fantastic times with some fantastic teams as well for the podcast too. I will let you get back to sunshine, swimming, and crosswords in the sun.
It's off. How could you? When you must wonder, he's a tough boy. How does he do that? How can you, this stage of his life, be doing all that stuff? I know, it's frightening, but you're not. But Jane says, I'll just keep in. I'm just that kind of guy. When she goes out, I come back in with a noise pop. Like, you know, I have a bunch of flowers and go in. I say to her, she looks at me and she goes, yeah, and I go, I'm just that type of guy. So, you know, I'm just that.
Well, that's it for this week's show. My sincere thanks to Dermot for giving me so much of his time, and it still feels like we just scratched the surface on a remarkable career. His autobiography, written by Neil O'Riordan, is available to buy, and it's called Better Without the Ball. A cracking read for any fan of football, not just those of the League of Ireland persuasion either. Better Without the Ball is the book. Don't forget to share the show on your social media channels to let more people find out about the history and heritage of Irish football. Turn on notifications on whatever podcast platform you use so they can get notified straight away when a new episode drops. And remember, support your local League of Ireland and Northern Ireland Football League club. It's our heritage, it's our game. Until next time, bye for now.